ID, the Future, a podcast about evolution and intelligent design.
Is the famous panda's thumb evidence of unguided evolutionary processes? Or is it a masterpiece of engineering and the result of intelligent design? Welcome to ID, the Future. I'm your host, Andrew McDermott. Well, today, continuing my conversation with retired geneticist Dr. Wolf Eckhart Lernick, as we discuss his new paper reviewing the debate over the panda's thumb. Giant pandas have an elongated wrist bone, the radial sesamoid, that allows them to handle and eat bamboo with great dexterity. Some claim it's an imperfectly and inefficiently formed structure that is clear evidence of evolutionary processes at work. Others call it one of the most extraordinary manipulation systems in the mammalian world, and clear evidence of engineering. So, which is it? Well, that's the topic of our conversation today. Now, in case you don't know about Wolf Eckhart Lernick, here's a few basics. Mathematician and ID theorist Granville Sewell has described Dr. Lernick as an intelligent design pioneer. That's because for over 50 years, Dr. Lernick has been offering robust criticism of Darwinian theory and advocating for intelligent design. He argued for intelligent design in his 1971 Masters of Science thesis at the Free University of Berlin. His faculty advisor there, the director of the Botanical Gardens and Botanical Museum of Berlin, had high praise for his thesis. Finally, the director said, a master's thesis in which a young man turns decidedly against a sacred cow, Neo-Darwinism, or the theory of descent in general, and demonstrates the sore points of a doctrine, which for most minds is thought of not just as a theory, as a great synopsis, but as an impeccable and almost completely proven fact. Wolf Eckhart would go on to earn a PhD from the University of Bonn and work as a geneticist for over 25 years at the Max Planck Institute for Plant Breeding Research in Cologne. He has continued throughout his career, and now in retirement, to criticize Darwinism and promote intelligent design in his writings, several of which have been published in scientific journals. Dr. Lernick, welcome back.
Thank you very much for having me.
Oh, absolutely. It's a pleasure. Well, for those who haven't caught part one of this conversation, let's briefly recover and review what we've looked at. We started by discussing your scientific training and career as a botanist, and how it prepared you to critique Darwinian claims and advocate for intelligent design. We looked at the blueprint of the panda's hand and the arguments for and against its design. We discussed the related debate between Bristol University bioengineer Stuart Burgess and City University of New York professor of biology Nathan Lentz on the topic of whether the human wrist is a marvel of engineering or the product of unguided evolutionary processes. And we also talked in part one about the dual function of the panda's hand for walking as well as manipulation of its food of choice, which is yummy bamboo. So those are some things we covered. Let's jump into a little more detail today as we review this very interesting and important controversy. Well, Dr. Lernick, can you review for us the giant panda's hand and how it differs from other bears? And what is the radial sesamoid?
Yes. As mentioned in our first episode, in the panda, a thumb is visible on its forepaw, which helps in holding bamboo in place for feeding. The giant panda's paw has a digit, similar to a thumb and five fingers, so six digits in all. A thumb-like digit which helps it hold bamboo while eating, the Wikipedia quote. Although there are doubts concerning the simple homology interpretations in different sesamoid bones in various species, it is generally assumed that the giant panda has an enlarged radial sesamoid bone. We humans do not have a corresponding radial sesamoid bone, at least not one which would be clearly identifiable. Consuming a bamboo diet, the enlarged bone assists in grasping bamboo. Last time I tried to show this picture here, and you see perhaps this these fingers. This is the thumb, the panda's thumb, And the other bears have only these five digits. And this one is the panda thumb, this enlarged radial sesamoid. So in comparison to other bear species, the radial sesamoid is strongly enlarged. It is the main bone in the formation of the panda thumb, and that special thumb has been cited for decades as a special proof for the theory of evolution. In fact, it has become an icon of evolution. Darwinians have called it to be a crude structure, built from an odd part, clumsy, highly inefficient, imperfect, suboptimal, an example of bad design, a mistake which no intelligent designer would ever have made, and only evolution by mutations and natural selection could have produced. Nevertheless, when these same biologists were watching pandas alive, they, for example, like Davis and Gould, both originally involved in the bad design hypothesis, have confessed things like the following. Gould said, "I was amazed by their dexterity and wondered how the scion of a stock adapted for running could use its hands so adroitly." In plain English, he was amazed, astonished, surprised that a member of the bear family could use his 4 feet for both running and eating bamboo so perfectly. Dwight D. Davis wrote, "The skill and precision with which objects are grasped and manipulated by the feet is astonishing. I have observed animals pick up small items like single straws and handle them with greatest precision. Small discs of candy, less than an inch in diameter, were handled deftly and placed in the mouth." I may add that observing the pandas myself a long time at two different zoos, one in the Netherlands, two bears at that time, and the other in Belgium, at that time, five bears, but three, they had to give three bears that sent back to China in the meantime. And looking and studying them, observing them, I can only agree. One can only be amazed and astonished and surprised that a member of the bear family could use his feet for both running and eating bamboo so perfectly. So is it just inefficient? Or is a dual or a double function, perhaps rather a masterpiece of engineering? By the way, I would like to add again to a little addition to our first episode that a so-called career in biology does not necessarily prepare you to question orthodox Darwinism. On the contrary, it rather does everything to keep you away from questioning it. However, any intelligent, open-minded person can discover many facts to question orthodox neo-Darwinism for himself.
Yeah, I really appreciate that point. You get that training, which is supposed to reinforce the Darwinian claims and perspective. But just in doing the study that you will do as a biologist, you can figure out where Darwin and his theory went wrong and where it's not working, and you can make the claims that you didn't make just in the studying of biology.
Yes, exactly. It is, you become acquainted with many complex structures, irreducibly complex structures, and many other structures, which can hardly be happened by an action of many chances.
Right. Well, Dr. Lonig, you have written a very helpful review paper about the panda's thumb controversy. And in that paper, you refer to something called the optimal panda principle. Can you explain what this principle suggests in contrast to paleontologist Stephen Jay Gould's panda principle? Does it imply that the panda is exactly as it should be for its specific lifestyle?
Well, Stephen Jay Gould called his theory, key point in three words, imperfection proves evolution, the panda principle. Just focusing almost entirely on the panda's thumb, disregarding almost all the rest. So he was focusing, and many other biologists do the same, focusing on the isolated organ instead of regarding the context of the biological system as a whole to which it belongs. Although the French biologist Cyril Barrett still upholds Gould's panda principle in his panda book of 2023, he came to the conclusion that the length of the thumb is optimal. In French, sa longueur n'est donc ni minimale nor maximale, mais optimale. Neither minimal nor maximal, but optimal. Apart from a system of tightly linked anatomical parts, the functional complex with other bones, the tremendous development of radial sesamoid, the strongly enlarged scapholuna, the dominant basic bone for the radial sesamoid, the carpus forearm articulation, largely between the scapholuna and the radius, etc. There is also a unique gut microbiome in giant pandas involved in protein metabolism. Thus, not only the length of these bones is optimal, but the entire panda system for grasping, walking, climbing, as well as to inhabit in and living from large bamboo forests, fulfilling major, weighty and serious ecological tasks. Recall, please, from our first session, the following quotes. Pandas play an important role in the forest ecosystem where they live. Seeds and plant matter collects on their fur, which is then deposited as they move throughout their habit. They also climb trees and swim, which further helps disperse the seeds. Giant pandas help to keep their mountain forests healthy by spreading seeds in their droppings, which helps vegetation to thrive. The giant panda's forest habitat is also important for local people, for food, income, and fuel for cooking and heating. They also play a crucial role in regulating water flow, interestingly. The pandas live in the mountain catchment areas of Yangtze and Yellow Rivers. The forests act as natural watersheds, helping to control water runoff, reduce soil erosion, and maintain water quality, which over 500 million people depend on. If pandas were to go extinct, China's bamboo forests would greatly suffer, since pandas help spread bamboo seeds that they pass in their feces. By spreading these seeds, they help bamboo plants to spread and grow. So, considering all the different aspects of the panda's biology, instead of focusing on just one isolated anatomical structure, I would call it the optimally intelligently designed panda system, or in brief, the optimal panda principle. Exactly as a far-sighted, ingenious genetic engineer would have considered and implemented it on all biological organs. So this is considering the entire system of the panda, how it lives, how it is designed, how it eats, the digestive system, and the many interesting facts which we find in the ecological system.
And, you know, to me, the panda's thumb is a great argument for bringing the engineers together with the biologists, because you can't expect a biologist who's been brought up on a reductionist, bottom-up evolutionary framework to be able to look at the design inherent in the panda and in the panda's anatomy and how it works in its ecosystem, and expect that person to come up with you know, the actual things that are happening. It's just not going to work, you know, with that sort of training that most biologists are getting. But if you put the engineers with the biologists, well, then you can start looking at principles of engineering and top-down design. Well, as you note, Dr. Loenig, Darwinists have described the panda's thumb as crude, built from an odd part, clumsy, highly inefficient, imperfect, suboptimal. But you ask a very important question in your paper, and that is this: if the panda's thumb is an embodiment of bad design, where are the evolutionists' proposals of how it could have been designed better? What would you say to that question?
It's a very good question. I raised that question publicly twice at Evolution News and Science Today in June and July 2024. I never received proposals for a better design by evolutionary biologists, nor have I have never seen any such suggestions or proposals anywhere else.
And yet it's a very good question, isn't it? They're quick to call it clumsy and suboptimal, but they don't really offer up much in the way of, well, it should have been this way, you know, which is telling. Now, Dr. Loenig, your specialty is genetics. So let's take a few minutes to delve into the genetic secrets of the giant panda to see what light it sheds on the debate over the panda's thumb. First, panda genomes are packed with genetic variations, millions of them. Can you tell us about this and what kinds of questions it raises about how evolution works?
Well, yes, I like to speak about that, giving some quotations. Li et al. In their Nature paper of 2010 stated that we identified more than 2.7 million heterozygous single nucleotide polymorphisms in a diploid genome. Well, what is a single nucleotide polymorphism? It is it's abbreviated SNP, SNPs, or plural SNP and SNPs. It's a germline substitution of a single nucleotide at a specific position in the genome. And now, such enormous numbers of nucleotide polymorphisms have been detected in almost all organisms. The panda is no exception on this general rule. For example, concerning other bears, Cronin et al. Write, we identified 13.8 million single nucleotide polymorphisms, SNPs, in three species, polar bear, brown bear, and black bears, aligned to the polar bear genome. And we, of course, are always interested also in human beings, as humans. We are, Shohan et al., 2022, mentioned on average there are 84 million single nucleotide polymorphisms in the human genome. Now, the captivating point for neo-Darwinism now is this. These enormous numbers of SNPs and also additional genetic variations clearly refute the synthetic theory of evolution or neo-Darwinism, which claimed that all changes, including those at the molecular genetic level, were controlled and directed by selection. Important point, the number of SNPs in the millions in humans alone exceeds anything that could have even been imagined in terms of variation in pre-molecular times and even up until a few years ago. This is a diversity that no amount of strict selection could even come close to controlling, in stark contradiction to Darwin and the neo-Darwinians, that, quote Darwin, natural selection is daily and hourly scrutinizing throughout the world, every variation, even the slightest, rejecting that which is bad, preserving and adding up all that is good. So this is simply impossible for these millions of SNPs and many other genetic molecular variations.
So you have evidence of genetic diversity in these animals, but that's not answerable through a Darwinian mechanism, is what you're saying?
Yes, yes. I would like to add that in 1968, Kimura, the Japanese famous geneticist, proposed the neutral theory of molecular evolution, which states that the majority of amino acid substitutions in evolution must be neutral with respect to natural selection and due to random genetic drift at reproduction. Similarly, Kimura, 1980, I believe that the traditional paradigm of neo-Darwinism needs drastic revision. However, the renowned Professor Dennis Noble from Oxford states that a revision is not enough. He said clearly and unmistakably, this theory has to be replaced. So the majority of these mutations, it is over 99.999%, now falls into the 100% completely neutral range. It is not correct that natural selection has, as we have just quoted, is daily and hourly scrutinizing throughout the world every variation, even the slightest, and so on. This is simply wrong to tell the public such things.
Yeah, giving natural selection too much credit. Well, what about the specific genes that make pandas unique, particularly those involved in their bamboo-only diet and their somewhat unusual metabolism? Tell us about the genes that make pandas unique and why they're important.
Well, yes, that's very interesting. Here at our report in 2020 that giant pandas have several families of amplified genes, among which salivary secretion, pancreatic secretion, insulin secretion, and parathyroid hormone synthesis, secretion and function pathways may be important for the digestion and adaptation of giant pandas to bamboo. The amylase gene copy number of a giant panda is higher than that of the genomes of the carnivores which we queried, which is consistent with the fact that the giant panda eats mainly hemicellulose and starchy materials. So amylase is for digesting starchy materials. They also mentioned that they found 93 genes, which they say were found to be under positive selection. Now, how do they know that they were under positive selection? In the present study, these 93 genes were interpreted in all the cases, the authors interpreted in agreement with other evolutionists an excess of non-synonymous differences in genes as mutations due to the action of positive selection. This is a retrospect interpretation of the gene sequence which they discovered because it had so many non-synonymous substitutions. However, the authors emphasize that the function of these genes in giant pandas need to be further verified. The authors also say that the giant pandas' dietary habits have shifted dramatically to a strict bamboo diet. And then they admit, of course, as every intelligent person will admit, the reasons for the changes in the diet of giant pandas are still largely unknown, because you have no evolutionary theory who could convincingly explain such a shift of the normal bear diet, although even normal bears, brown bear, Malay bear, and others, eat a lot of plant material. They are not strictly carnivorous. Even 90% of their nourishment consists of plant material. in many cases, except the polar bear. Deng et al. Have emphasized in 2023 that the unique gut microbiome of giant pandas involved in protein metabolism contributes to the host's dietary adaptation to bamboo. And they propose that their findings suggest that Streptococcus alactolyticus is an important player in the gut microbiota that contributes to the giant panda's dietary adaptation by more involvement in protein rather than in carbohydrate metabolism. But it's a new aspect that they have a unique gut microbiome, which helps to digest proteins.
Now, you mentioned the discovery of over 2,500 panda-specific genes. Tell us about orphan genes and why these genes, unique to pandas and no other animal, can be particularly insightful.
Well, what are orphan genes? Answer. Orphan genes, abbreviated orphans, are taxonomically restricted genes, TRGs, are genes that lack a detectable homologue outside of a given species or lineage. Quotation of Wikipedia. To quote from a recent PLOS article of 2023, with the numerous genomes sequenced today, it has been revealed that a noteworthy percentage of genes in a given taxon of organism in the phylogenetic tree of life do not have orthologous sequences in other taxa. These sequences are commonly referred to as orphans. They're found as single occurrences in a single species or as taxonomically restricted genes, TRGs, when found at higher taxonomic levels. An example, Richard Bux reported in 2016 the following. This week in Nature, I and my co-authors published the ash tree genome. Within it, we found 38,852 protein-coding genes. Of these, one quarter, 9,604, were unique to the ash tree. And they made that comparison with 10 other plants: coffee, grape, loblolly pine, monkey flower, poplar, tomato, umbrella, garabidopsis, barrel medic, and bladderwort. Orphan genes are found every time a new genome is sequenced. Their ubiquity has been one of the biggest surprises of genomics over the last 20 years. This is still Bux et al. Generally, between 10 and 30% of orphan genes are given for many species. There are 23,371 annotated protein coding genes in giant panda. 10% would mean about 2,300 orphan genes in the panda. But I have also contacted Paul Nelson, who has done important work on the orphan genes. And he was quoting Li et al. 2022, who write, the novel annotation identified 22,924 high-confidence protein-coding genes, of which 92.3% were functionally annotated genes. And now, Nelson continued, the lack of annotation is often, not always, but often, a good clue to orphan status. This would mean that approximately 1,765 protein-coding genes in the pandas are taxon-specific. So, nevertheless, he stressed that at present the question is open.
Well, orphan genes are certainly a provocative part of the argument against Darwinian evolution. So it's interesting to see how they play into the panda specifically. Now, then there's a curious case of the DUOX2 gene, a single gene mutation in pandas that affects their thyroid hormones. This might sound like a flaw, but it could actually be a key part of how pandas conserve energy on their low-calorie bamboo diet. Can you give us more detail about that particular gene mutation?
Yes, I'd like to do so. Rudolf, one of the authors or the lead author of this paper, corresponding paper, a report in the giant panda genome, dual oxidase 2, a gene critical for thyroid hormone synthesis, contains a giant panda unique single nucleotide mutation that results in a premature stop and possibly a non-functional protein. However, it is not yet known whether this premature stop codon results in no translation of the gene or whether it is a truncated version of the protein that is produced that it may have biological functions. The important point here is that in many cases of so-called junk DNA, important functions were finally discovered. The Casey Luscombe's literature survey of 2024 on the topic of so-called junk DNA. He quotes there, he and his co-authors quote more than 800 papers showing functional cases which were first surmised to be just junk DNA. Important point is that there were experiments with mice, and they did the same with mice. They had to put a premature stop codon in that dual oxidase 2 gene. And the mice now showed many of the features of the pandas, interestingly. However, I would say, applying the optimal panda principle here, higher serum thyroxine in pandas most certainly and undeniably could not transform the panda into a new bear species like the Asian black bear, the brown bear, or the sun bear. Considering the entire panda system, including genes involved in their physiological and morphological traits, known and probably many still unknown, unidentified ones at present. The radial sesamoid is synorganized into the panda's entire anatomy and behavior for grasping, walking, and climbing. Apart from the panda's unique gut microbiome, recall, please, that also the panda's significance for major ecological tasks, which I've mentioned a few minutes ago. And this is exactly as a far-sighted, ingenious genetic engineer would have considered and implemented it on all biological. So this will not be fully explained by the panda unique single nucleotide mutation in a DUOX2 gene, which is absent in the other carnivores, mice and humans.
Yeah. Well, what about the fossil record? What can it tell us about pandas and their ancient relatives?
Well, Wang et al. 2022 have this to say about Ailuarctos. This is a fossil displaying a thumb almost identical to that of the panda Ailuropoda. Ailuarctos, this fossil, is from the late Miocene of China, some 8 million years ago, according to the geological timetable. Considering a generation time for the panda of 4.5 to 6.5 years would mean a constancy of the panda population of more than 1 million generation of panda bears. Since the late Miocene, the thumb has not enlarged further because it must be balanced with the constraints of weight bearing while walking in a plantigrade posture. This morphological adaptation in panda evolution thus reflects a dual function of the radial sesamoid for both bamboo manipulation and weight distribution. In general, the enormous constancy of such living fossils was also something quite unsuspected from an evolutionary point of view. Or as well-known Niall Eldridge once put it, living fossils are something of an embarrassment to the expectation that evolutionary change is inevitable as time goes by. And that, and what is more, living fossils are not the exception, as they are usually portrayed in the biological and otherwhere literature, but the rule for a large part of animal and plant families. We are literally surrounded by living fossils, angiosperms, mammals, birds, many other organisms. I have written about that topic on Darwin's Abominable Mystery.
Yeah. Okay, so anything but plausible.
Yes.
So neo-Darwinian mechanisms seem to be insufficient to explain the presence of this well-suited, if unusual, adaptation in pandas. The intelligent design perspective is the view that biological systems are purposefully designed rather than the result of accumulated imperfections. So why is ID, why is intelligent design a better explanation for the panda's thumb?
As already pointed out now several times, to the best of my knowledge, none of the evolutionists who criticize the panda's thumb as being crude, clumsy, highly inefficient, imperfect, suboptimal, and bad design have ever suggested a better construction for that thumb. Probably because a better, in quotation marks, totally different thumb for grasping would hinder the panda's ability to walk properly. This is always a dual function which must be emphasized. On the other hand, we may ask, why not intelligent design? William Dembski and Michael B. have repeatedly emphasized that in our daily method to detect intelligent design, there is no magic, no vitalism, no appeal to occult forces involved. And indeed, inferring design is widespread, rational, and objectifiable. Dembski, hardly a dubious innovation. Intelligent design formalizes and makes precise something we do all the time. All of us are all the time engaged in a form of rational activity, which, without being tendentious, can be described as inferring design. Inferring design is a perfectly common and well-accepted human activity. People find it important to identify events that are caused through the purposeful, premeditated action of an intelligent agent and to distinguish such events from events due to either law or chance. Intelligent design unpacks the logic of this everyday activity and applies it to the questions of science. To repeat and emphasize, I think so important, there is no magic, no vitalism, no appeal to occult forces here. It is widespread intelligent design, rational and objectifiable. How is it objectifiable? Now, to the scientific tools to detect ID in organisms belong irreducible complexity and specificity. Be defined. By irreducibly complex, I mean a single system composed of several well-matched interacting parts that contribute to the basic functions, whereas the removal of any one of the parts causes a system to effectively cease functioning. So you can look at these complex systems in biology and ask the question, is there irreducible complexity involved or not? And the other point is, even if irreducible complexity is not involved, specified complexity may be involved. Specified complexity, the property of an object being both unlikely and complexly structured or structurally organized, as well as to conform to an independent specification. Objects exhibiting specified complexity must be both complex, unlikely under the relevant probability distribution, and specified, e.g., conform to an independent or detached specification.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting, and I like some of the quotes that you include as you make an argument for intelligent design behind the design of the panda's thumb. Well, this is certainly a fascinating topic, and I really appreciate you taking the time, Dr. Lonig, to share your insights into this intriguing debate. I want to thank you for unpacking some of the insights that you've prepared in this paper.
Well, thank you very much for inviting and having formulated so many well-formulated questions which could be answered by biological facts. It shows, to sum up, this is a really not just an isolated structure. It must be seen in the complex web of the biological system, and so I would call it the optimal panda principle.
Yeah. Well, in the show notes for this episode, always available at idthefuture.com, we'll include links to Dr. Lonig's paper on the panda's thumb, so you can read it and look at it yourself, as well as a link to his website where you'll find detailed listings of his research and publications. In addition to the panda, he's also written about other animals, including the koala bear, birds, lions, hippos, and giraffes. And of course, he's written about many examples of intelligent design in the plant world too, from plant galls to the flowering plants explosion in the fossil record, and the difficulties it presents for Darwin's theory. It's all at Dr. Lonig's website, which we'll link to in the show notes for today's episode. Well, for ID the Future, I'm Andrew McDermott. Thanks for listening.
Visit us at idthefuture.com and intelligentdesign.org. This program is Copyright Discovery Institute and recorded by its Center for Science and Culture.